This conference will now be recorded.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the May 19th. I had to look at the front of the agenda because I can't keep track of the dates anymore. For the May 19th, 2022 Citizens Advisory Board meeting. First item of business is to take attendance since some of us are here in person and some of us are participating online. So please indicate that you're here when I call your name. Michelle Mullins.
Here.
Mary Bigelow.
Here.
Charles Chiusano.
Here.
Karen Christiana.
Here.
Jason Farrell.
Here.
Kevin Johnston. Kevin's not here right now. Cheryl Lipson.
Present.
Laura Schuyler.
Here.
All right. Thank you, folks. So we are just missing Kevin at the moment. If someone can just watch to see if someone joined in. He normally calls in and I'll just have to ask if Kevin has joined. First order of business for us is to approve the minutes of the April 21st, 2022 regular meeting. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Thank you, Charles and Mary. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstaining? All right. Motion passes. Thank you very much. For my report, not really all that much other than we do need a hearing officer for July 14th. We already have Laura for June 9th, but we need a hearing officer for July 14th. If anyone is interested, if not, then I should be able. Are you sure, Charles?
Let's test the old way, so we have questions.
Thank you, Charles. Very good, and I don't have anything else for my report. So with that, let's move right along to Brian O'Dowd for the legal division.
Good afternoon, board members. Brian O'Dowd for the record. You should have the legal division report in front of you along with the appendix. I don't have anything to add. You know, as you'll see, it was another very busy reporting period for us. I think it was a total of 89 requests. And I hope I explained the situation involving the Bridgeport mayor and the Connecticut Port Authority well enough. You know, if anybody has any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. But aside from those two, you know, just the busy month and that issue, I don't have anything to add. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Brian? All right. Well, we continue to appreciate the work, the volume and quality of work that you and all the members of the legal division are doing. Mark Wazalewski on the enforcement division.
Thank you, Chair Patrick. And hello, board members. Good afternoon. The enforcement report is in the package. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. I do want to highlight just a few things. The division is very busy as well. But with regard to our UAPA matters, the 20 lobbyist matters that were originally scheduled for the hearing next month have been reduced to 8 matters, either through resolution or dismissal. And in all likelihood, we'll work towards settling most of those, if not all of them, before the next hearing. The division is also in the process of enforcing the late statements of financial interest that were due by May 2nd this year. 13 notices of hearing are in the process of being issued for the July 14th hearing date. We anticipate that these numbers all will be reduced by the time that July 14th will be around. And there may be significant number of requirements from this particular higher levels, and therefore we expect a lot of department interest filers filing their last report. So we're gonna remain busy throughout the summer. Do you have any questions? I'm glad to answer them.
Questions for Mark? No, and thank you. Mark, to you and to your division for all the things that you've ever done. here.
Yes.
So let's move on to the lobbyist audit report. Mark Craven.
Good afternoon, board members. In your packet, you have the audit report for NAME, which is the New England Air Museum. There are no findings in the audit report, but I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
All right, seeing that there are no findings and hearing no questions, can I get a motion to approve the audit report for NAME?
So moved.
Thank you, Cheryl. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Cheryl. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Did I hear an opposed?
I think there was an aye.
Oh, it was a late aye. Okay. No opposition. How about abstention? Very good. Thank you so much. All right. So, Peter Lewandowski, who's pinch hitting on the education and communication.
I'll update you on, of course, on this position in my executive director's report. But as to the education report, you have a copy of the training report for the month of May. Again, we continue to be fairly busy on this front, maybe not as busy as in April. If you recall, in April, we've had a good number of trainings, particularly from DAS. We provided 18 trainings to DAS alone. Now, but again, there are some trainings going on. I actually, one got moved from today. The Children's League will be held next week. They've requested just a change of date. But again, we're scheduling additional training, so this is kind of an ongoing process. In terms of the online training course, the statewide human resources is linking our online course, or has linked the online course to the LinkedIn platform. So for new employees, that will be a way to be exposed to the trainings, our online training, and also through LinkedIn, they'll be able to see our website as well. Next month, we're planning to provide you with another installment of our in-depth trainings on specific provisions of the code. We've held already one on revolving door and conflicts of interest. Brian will hold a training either, we still have to determine whether it's going to be gifts or outside employment for one of those, the June meeting. And after we hold those two, we'll probably close our last final installment will be on the Code of Ethics for Lobbyists, because as being regulators of the lobbying community, I think it's also good to have that refresher and ask questions about lobbying issues. So that will be our last installment, probably sometime in early fall. So that's all I have. And I just want to thank Diane again for preparing the media report. She's responsible, helping me out with you know, with monitoring what's out there that's ethics related. And you have it in your packet. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them on that.
Any questions? All right.
And I'll move on to the legislative report. This will be our final legislative report for this legislative session. Unfortunately, you received an email from me the day after the session and as that had ended, noted that both of our legislative initiatives did not advance in this session. I obviously had multiple conversations with the speaker and with all the legislative leaders. Both also in the GAE and their assistants who are responsible for doing the screening of bills. Everyone was, no one expressed any objections, outright objections to those bills. But at the same time, obviously someone did have objection to it because it did not advance. Those bills, particularly the conflicts bill, is our perennial. You know about that for many years. And it's an important bill. I've Already noted to one legislator that most likely will be back. This is something that was already covered in the media 2 years ago by a reporter on that very subject, an extensive reporting. You know, I think the article back then was, you know, maybe third time is a charm, I think, if I recall, the because we passed this conflicts bill in the Senate two occasions. So they were hoping that maybe third time successful, but that is not happening. Actually, one senator noted to me because I mentioned that the fact that it passed in the Senate twice, and he said to me, "It means nothing in the House. Even if it passes twice, or three times, four times in the Senate, House is a separate entity, and they determine." They wish to advance something or not, so we'll see. It's obviously I'll bring the legislative packet back to you probably later in this fall. The next session is a long session. It starts early. It starts in January. Sometime this fall we can have this conversation as to how we want to proceed or where we want to go in the next legislative session.
Of how people voted?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every vote, every bill is noted.
So the people that voted against it, is there a way, or would that be considered harassment?
Well, it didn't get voted.
It was never put up for a vote. So, for example, in the GAE, it passed on consent. Everyone in the committee voted for the bills to get out.
Right.
In advance and to go on the floor, but once it's on the calendar, that's when you know. Once it's put out for a vote, yeah, you see who voted how, but
getting it on the calendar,
exactly deciding to put it up for a vote. That's the key.
And I thought it was up for a vote.
In the Senate, it's twice, but also it passed unanimously in the Senate. So. The record in the Senate, at least at the time, is clear that every senator voted for it. It's the House that hasn't.
So what can be done to change the outcome? I mean, you saw the half full cup the last time. I have the crack. You have a half full cup. I just find it very frustrating because, like, you take one step forward and two steps back. You think something positive is going to be coming of this. And in my estimation, there is no reason not to have this. Is there anything else that could be done short of hard-handed, you know, what can be done? Anything?
You know, the other big unknown is, you know, what will be the makeup of the House after the election?
Yeah.
That's the unknown. That may change the dynamic. Who knows? But at this point, it's just a guessing game because clearly those are the type of bills, you know, unless you're for it. If you're against it, you're probably the one to amplify your opposition because it's something that relates to, it's a subject matter that pertains to
both.
Yeah. So. Folks, I mean, clearly, this doesn't really affect the legislators in any large measure because, as you know, there's a specific provision there that allows the legislators to vote on matters that pertain to their employers, provided they disclose it. So there's a disclosure mechanism. And there are very, you really can count on your fingers the number of bills that are specific to an individual employer, if any. Most bills that go that are presented on the floor apply to industries, apply to occupations. So they can take a vote without even any disclosure that, you know, yes, the vote applies, for example, to the banking industry, but it applies to all banks. So it doesn't really matter.
I'm having such a hard time understanding why this.
Yeah, but if the leadership doesn't want to vote on it, so people don't have to put their name saying I oppose it, then the leadership just doesn't bring it to a vote. So it may require a change in leadership.
Oh, we can't. Okay.
That's what all of this is about. If they don't want to bring it up for a vote, it will never see the light of day.
I just get very frustrated.
But you know, with the glass half full, as I said in the email, I probably drank it too much from last year. We were, in comparison to previous, we were successful, we failed. I thought we had a chance this time. But it is an important bill. I mean, this is something, and I've noted to the leadership that this particular bill is really more focused on the executive branch agencies, because we have number of high-ranking officials or even people who are in procurement and contracting who may have those conflicts, and they're the ones who actually handle state finances. It's less of an issue, I would say, on the legislative front, even though we have a part-time legislature that takes up a vote on matters that may be of import to their employer. But again, as I noted, most bills are very generic in their application.
Exactly.
So it's not, I wouldn't be concerned on their side, but it's the executive branch employees especially potential conflicts. It's an important thing, and it's kind of a common sense provision.
We'll revisit in November and December what the strategy looks like for the upcoming legislative session.
Sure, absolutely.
You know what happens in the election.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is frustrating, Sharon. It is. It's frustrating.
You have to get John Linda writing some more articles, right?
The flip side of it is we didn't experience any adverse initiatives that were negative to either the code of ethics or operations of this agency. I mean, we, for example, received the funding for the 16th position. So it's both. You play offense and defense during legislative session. And, you know, offensively, we didn't succeed, but, you know, defensively, nothing happened, too. So, so in a way, I mean, there is... it's important. I think every agency is. We've seen situations, and you've been the witness to it, where there were adverse bills that passed. Some of them passed in very obscure data bills that were adverse to our code. And
hurry up and wait is what it is.
So that's all I have on legislative. Matters. Sure. So, as I noted, I wanted to touch base on the personnel front, specifically the position for the Director of Education and Communications. As you already know, and I've said this many times, that position is red circled. In other words, it's not available anymore. So, we have to revamp the job description or utilize the current catalog of positions that are available out there. Now, this position has to be in classified service per statutory language, so we cannot go into unclassified listings and choose, even though the picks under unclassified positions are broader and better for us, we have to look at our classified positions. So my counterpart at Freedom of Information, Colleen Murphy, is in the same boat. She is also losing her education director, and it's also red circled. We're really, literally in the same predicament. So we've requested a meeting with the DAS commissioner to discuss this issue. And hopefully we'll be able to resolve it. Now, in terms of, again, you already know the position is critical to the operations of our agency. Similarly for the Freedom of Information Commission, and we just have to highlight to DAS that what we need to do is reclassify or maybe either form new position or tinker with existing listings to broaden the scope of what these positions can do. Because right now it's very limiting. Our Director of Education and Communications not only is responsible clearly for education, but also for external communications, PR, website content management, and also assistance with legislative matters. So it's a broad position in terms of the tasks that the position is responsible for is fairly broad, and none of the existing listings offer this currently. So hopefully we'll be able to resolve this fairly soon.
And the freedom of information position essentially the same description. So if they were to agree to it.
Yes, exactly.
The description. Yeah. Both agencies.
Absolutely. Like, for example, legal investigators, that the position that Garrett and Mike hold, the same job description applies to legal investigators in State and State Elections Enforcement Commission and the Office of the Attorney General. So when you look at job specs, it's specifically noted that this position applies to all three agencies. And similarly, we want to do that for us, for ethics and freedom of information.
Does our education person, would that job description match the one for FOIA? Would it also match the one for state elections? And if so, couldn't we go to DAS and say, this really is what we need? Can we please get this job description posted?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do. Yeah, because we want to, I think there are positions right now that are exclusive to education. You just simply focus there are trainer positions, but they're limited in scope. They're exclusively focused on education. Our position, as I noted, deals with the legislative matters, with PR, with external relations. And on their classified list, unclassified listings, there are a few positions. For example, director of communication is broader because it focuses on those type of matters, legislative, PR, external relations, and also education. Unfortunately, by statute, we're limited. This position has to be classified unless we change the statutory language. We only have three positions that are unclassified in our ranks, and that is my position, Mark's, and Brian's. But those are specifically enumerated positions in the statute. All other staff positions are classified, and that also extends to the director of education.
What happens if Nancy hadn't left?
We'd be golden.
Nancy would be presenting the education report.
She's in Phoenix. She said she's away right now.
Yeah. No, that's nothing with it. Yeah. Once she left that position, the position closed.
Are there any other agencies who have that same? In the same quandary we are in, that really could use some weight maybe then to get the unclassified opened up.
Yeah.
You know, put enough pressure on getting the legislation changed.
That's a good question because I know that a good number of these positions were red circled several years ago during the Mueller administration, and a number of especially communications related positions were red circled. And so,
can't get somebody to change the color of the ink, can?
Well, under the Golden Dome, they can do it.
Did you even get a response from the DAS?
Not yet. It's been crickets. I'm waiting. Exchange emails just last night with the executive assistant to the commissioner, and so she acknowledged that she will get back to me.
That would be very frustrating. Very frustrating. Can't you make something happen for all this time?
All right. So moving on the SFI front, you received my email. Last night, the OSC news that was actually shared with all the ethics liaisons 97% of filers were timely. We had 47 agencies that earned the timely distinction, and 12 who were off just by one filing. So as we are, I just want to thank Anne, Al, Henry for handling all the SFIs, particularly the logistics. People call in and there's some technical issues with their filing, and you know, they've been very responsive. So thank you to the staff for this. And Mark obviously is handling the outliers, and we're dwindling down. I think we're pretty much the same range of non-compliance that we've had over the years. So it's few that are out there, but eventually the filings are made. On the subject, some good news. We'll eventually have a cafeteria vendor here in this building. So you can get sandwiches here right before the meeting. The cafeteria, from what I was told, that vendor will be in place hopefully later this summer. This was an interesting development, because all tenants in this building, all the agencies, will have to pony up some per person cost, a startup fee, to have the vendor in place. So depending on the number of and this is the evidently the practice that has developed in, you know, all these vacant buildings or the buildings where there's a lot of teleworking going on. Many of these vendors want some stability, which is understandable. I mean, because of the pandemic, because of telework.
Right.
You're not going to find someone willing to show up, open shop, and
have nobody.
Exactly. So it's becoming a normal practice to ask for these startup fees. Some vendors ask for management fees. They have a couple, and actually one particularly asked for $80,000. This one is asking for $45,000. Our contribution, our agency's contribution, will be $900. It's a one-time fee. Other, obviously, because it's based on the number of employees in your agency. Other, the big agencies in this building, the Office of the Attorney General, Comptrollers, they're paying over $10,000. In one case, I think it's almost $14,000. So, but that's the that's what they're asking. So everyone is contributing. So we will, and you know, they'll open up slowly. We'll have breakfast and lunch service. Right now, the plan is to definitely have it open Tuesday through Thursday, with either Monday or Friday off, day off for them. So it will be kind of a four-day service during the week. We'll definitely have it on Thursday, I know that for sure. So, but we'll see. So at least slowly right now, I mean, that there's a great kitchen. I mean, all the amenities and everything are in place. It's just we have to go to trucks still to get a sandwich. So hopefully that will change soon. And telework, you know, again, as you know, all employees can telework, and we do telework in 6-month increments. So July 1st is the new telework period that will commence. Employees can sign up for it by the end of May, and managers review it to make sure. And again, I have to say the staff has been great. Whenever we need, obviously, you know, folks in the building because something is happening with their hearings or meetings. And I know some people are with the COVID roaming around again, folks tend to be very vigilant about it. So that's understandable. But again, the staff has been very accommodating to the needs of the agency and telework works for us. So that's all I have. That's plenty.
All right. Any questions for Peter? Okay, we have reached the public comment portion of the meeting. And I'll be silent for a moment to let anyone who may be participating by phone chime in. Okay, hearing nothing from the public, we do not need a closed session or an executive session, which means we only need a motion to adjourn. Yes, such a motion.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we are adjourned. We will see you all next month. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Why isn't this picking up the tab for food service? Where did I help get the private sector a long time?